Coast to coast on the World Wide Web, this is Trot Radio on standardbredcanada.ca.
Because I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man.
Hi, everybody. Norm Borg here with some good news for a change for those of us in terms of dealing with levels of government. In this case, the tax man. It's a story about a gentleman by the name of John Craig, a horse owner who was also a lawyer, who decided that the amount of deductions allowable under Section 31 of the Income Tax Act were unfair. It was very limiting, and he decided to do something about it. He took the revenue people, CCRA, to court, the tax man, and he won. To talk more about it, we have with us on the other end of my line, Catherine Wilson, a senior partner with Wilson Lewis. Her specialty is equine law, and as that pertains to taxes, of course. And she joins me on the other end of my line. Catherine, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Section 31 has been the bugaboo here. Mr. Craig, in this case, decided to fight it because of the restrictions that it placed on horse owners in terms of the maximum they could claim as a loss in their hobby or business or whatever you want to call it.
That's correct. What Section 31 does is where your horse racing business originally, before the Supreme Court has come down, where your horse racing business was not your chief source of income, they restricted the losses that you could deduct in that business against other income to a maximum of $8,750. In all other businesses, if you're a dentist and a restaurant owner and you've got losses in one business, you can deduct those business losses against your income from another business, except if you're a farmer. And horse racing owners, operators, they're defined as farmers. Okay. So we're caught with this, and if you, as a farmer or horse racing business owner, have income that is less in your farming than in your other source of business, then you're stuck with the $8,750 restriction.
Yeah,
and that's a problem. It's crippling for this industry.
It certainly is, because anybody who is within the industry will know that an $8,700 loss doesn't even cover the cost of an operation to correct a twisted bowel on a horse.
No,
you're looking at $10,000 right there.
Correctly, and there's no justification for this restriction on this industry at all.
Now, what's interesting to me as a layperson is that Section 31 of the Tax Act was interpreted into the law by the Supreme Court initially that put that wording in, and now has said, you know what, they got it wrong. Is that correct?
So Section 31, if you read the section, makes no sense.
Right.
So the legislature got it wrong, because they say that where a taxpayer's chief source of income for a taxation year is neither farming nor a combination of farming and some other source of income, then you're caught with the loss restrictions in Section 31. Well, your income is going to be either farming or a combination of farming and some other source of income. So it made no sense. So it went first to the Supreme Court of Canada in 1978 in a decision called Muldowan. And then they tried to interpret this section to make sense. And what they did is they read in the word subordinate into that phrase. So it would read, where a taxpayer's chief source of income is neither farming nor a combination of farming and some other subordinate source of income. So what happened from 1978 until Mr. Craig, basically, there was a Mr. Gunn earlier and then a Mr. Craig, is that if your racing income was less than your income from a dental practice, a law practice, a business, whatever, then you got caught, and your losses were restricted to $8,750. Doesn't matter how much time you spent at your racing business. Doesn't matter how much money you spent on your racing business. You could have spent $500,000 on it.
Right.
If you lost money, $8,750, that's it.
Now, this was born out of a sense of, I don't want to say class warfare, but I think the legislators, it sounded as though they just didn't want to give or be seen as giving a break to, does this sound familiar, quote-unquote, rich horse race owners.
I don't think that was the original intention of the legislation. are, and it's not, remember, this is all farmers. These are bee farmers, mm-hmm. these are, you know, grain farmers, this is a cow, this is everybody. And you know, they're not seen as rich, you know, fat cats. This is all farmers. Mm-hmm. And the intention of the legislature was actually to assist farmers, but because it was worded poorly, it's been reversed almost. And, mm-hmm. What you're saying is correct. That's what we're fighting in an attempt to undo the damage today.
Now, Mr. Quigg, who used his legal skills to his advantage, and bravo to him, while he was fighting this, also kept very intricate and meticulous records of his involvement as a horse owner, which, you know, really almost put him in the role of an active, you could say, equine manager, because he kept track of the hours in which he talked to trainers, researched on Trackit, for example, things of that nature.
I don't think he kept track of them, you know, on a daily basis in a journal kind of thing. He was a lawyer, so it was legal time probably, but not this. But certainly you can look over your year as a horse owner and say, how many hours do I spend in a week or a month? What the Supreme Court has done in the John Craig decision is they've gone back to that original Supreme Court decision in Meltdown, mm-hmm. and they said, you know, we got it wrong, and it's caused lots of problems. Let's get it right now. And they have looked at Section 31 and interpreted it in a different way. So back in 1978, they said, if your income from farming was less than your income from something else, you were caught by Section mm-hmm. 31. Today, and this is, everybody get your pens out, this is the new test.
Okay.
Okay? And what they're saying now is that the combination of the two incomes mm-hmm. is relevant. So they're saying if you have farming as your chief source of income, mm-hmm. right, you're good to go.
Okay.
So Section 31 doesn't apply to you.
Right.
So you can be a business owner, you own a car shop, detailing shop, and you own horses. If your income from horses is greater than the income from the other business, you're good to go. Okay. You're a full-time farmer. Section 31 doesn't apply. You can deduct all your losses. Mm-hmm. Okay. Number two, if your income from that other business is larger, mm-hmm. they're saying that's not fatal. The test now is that they're going to look at these factors. They're going to look at the capital you invest in your horse business and in the other business.
Okay.
And by capital, you know, you're building fences, you're buying horses, you're you know, the, mm-hmm. you know, the big dollars on capital purchases.
Okay.
So they're looking at the capital invested in both. Mm-hmm. They're looking at the income generated by both of these businesses.
Okay.
And they're looking at the time spent on both of those businesses.
That's what I think the key is here as far as Mr. Craig was concerned. You can correct me if I'm wrong. He did spend an awful lot of time.
That's part of it.
Yeah.
Because by time spent, you can almost break that down, though they include it as a fourth thing. They say the taxpayer's ordinary mode of living, mm-hmm. farming history, and future intentions and expectations, which, if you're talking about time spent and ordinary mode of living, I think that's kind of much, you know, it's all kind of together. And all of those factors together are relevant, not one, but all together.
Okay.
And then what the Supreme Court does now is they say this about those factors. The taxpayer must place a significant emphasis on each of those two businesses. So the buzzword in 1978 with Muldowan was subordinate income. Mm-hmm. The buzzword now is significant emphasis.
All right, let's break this down one final time, I guess, so that we can clearly define who might and who might not take advantage of this, okay? Mm-hmm. I am a track announcer. I make $200,000 a year. I own a $6,500 claimer that made $6,000. And that's all I've got for stock. I don't get to claim an excessive amount.
Or suffered a loss. What they're looking at...
So I don't qualify in that case.
No. What they're looking at is the amount of capital you expend, mm-hmm. the income you receive,
Right.
And the time spent, including how you live your life, around these two businesses, okay? And how much emphasis do you place on both? If you place a significant amount of emphasis on your horse business, you're good to go.
Even if it's one cheap claimer?
If it's, that's a test.
Wow.
You're good to go. Now, what does that mean? This is where we're going to see cases into the future. What does a significant emphasis mean? Well, they look at Craig. And Mr. Craig was exceptional in some respects because he put an awful lot of capital into his horse business. Okay, his losses were huge, but he spent a lot of money on his business. In terms of time, he spent about 600 hours a year on the horse business.
Wow.
He was a lawyer. He spent a whole lot more time at that, I can tell you. but he spent about 600 hours a year on his horse business. Now, what did he do? He'd get up in the morning. He'd check, you know, the racing results.
Yeah.
He'd speak to his trainer. He read journals. He was at the track on Saturdays. He attended, you know, X number of races. I think it was 42 or 48 races. So every day he did something on his horse business. He was also at his office doing his law. But every day he did something in the horse business for the most part. And not only that, but he was a chairperson of the industry's appeal board. So he was involved in the committee and association work as well.
Okay.
So if you look at Mr. Craig, he was quite involved. Now, does that mean you have to be that involved to get this to get the exemption? I don't think so.
No.
And where the case law is going to go in the future is how involved do you have to be? So if you're a radio announcer and you're a guy with a horse, but with that one horse, you're investing in capital, you're there and you're putting the time in and you're really doing it as a business rather than as an entertainment or sport, right? It becomes part of your ordinary mode of living. Those
right.
are the kinds of words they're using.
Mode of living is key here because most of us in this industry, we say it a million times, it's not a job, it's a way of life. I mean, you know, we don't just consider it work. So it is a mode of living, and most of us would then qualify under the kind of scenario you presented.
Well, this is where you're going to get the pushback because Revenue Canada, I think, is going to look at the word significant and you know, significant emphasis and say, well, you know, you're not enough. You know, it's not enough time or it's not enough capital or it's not enough income. It's not enough a part of your ordinary mode of living.
So can the legislators then almost codify how much time has to be put in?
You're not going to see this. This is all going to be decided in the courts.
Okay.
We're going to push back and we're going to say, no, I'm sorry, but I spend a lot of time, and most people do. You know, they spend a lot of time with their horses and reading racing journals and becoming informed and educated about the sport. And they treat it like they treat all their businesses. They want to do well at it, and they want to spend their time doing it. So certainly what it has, I will do, I can guarantee you this much, it's going to be a lot easier in our business to be a full-time farmer, meaning you can deduct all your losses, so it will be a lot easier, but it's not going to be everybody.
No, and it will go through a metamorphosis, I suppose, if you will. But that's the beauty of common law as opposed to civil code, isn't it? It's a breathing almost like an organism.
Yes, and it's completely factual determination, and that is going to be at the initial level, Rev Canada. And if you don't like what they say, and probably you won't, then you're going to appeal it up to the trial court decision, and it'll be the trial judge's decision. And if you want to deduct your full losses, then make sure you're involved. Join the association.
And keep
join
records.
Join the committees. Keep the one thing everyone needs to know, Norm, this applies to businesses only. If you're just doing this for a hobby and you're not running this like a business, you don't get any deductions. You can only deduct losses from a business against other income.
So I can see in the future a lot of small-time horse owners, potentially like myself, figuring that it's worth the $1,500 or whatever it costs for articles of incorporation to call myself, you know, the Joe Blow Stables, and that's my business.
You don't have to incorporate. You know, you just have to keep records.
Oh, even better.
Yeah, you just have, and you just, there are a lot of businesses are sole proprietors, meaning they're not incorporated, mm-hmm. or their partnerships. But I guess, you know, if you want to be a duck, you got to walk, talk like a duck.
Well, Catherine, you know, it's been some hard times in Ontario for people in our industry, and it's just nice to hear a bit of good news.
This is a good news story. It's going to mean that many, many of us who run these businesses and run them as a serious business and have been restricted in our losses, and not just us, this is all farmers. So this is huge. This is the guy in Saskatchewan that had a drought for 3 years and starts driving a school bus, and then suddenly Revenue Canada turns around and won't deduct his losses because he's making more income from the school bus because his farm has a drought. This has been a hammer on the farmer across Canada for 30, 40 years.
Catherine, I know you're very busy. In fact, you were kind enough to call in between appointments with clients.
You're getting me on my soapbox.
No, that's okay. I would love to join you.
I would invite all people listening to this to write to their MPs and tell them to abolish Section 31. That's what I would say. Yep.
I'm sure it will be no problem. Always a pleasure. Catherine Wilson, who is a senior partner, of course, with Wilson & Lewis and is a equine law attorney. Thank you so much for being on Trot Radio.
You're welcome. Yeah, I'm the tax man, and you're